at Penji is our commitment to helping those who are making sacrifices to help others. Thank you to those making a difference in your community. We are currently accepting applications for Penji for Nonprofits. If you know a nonprofit or you are one yourself, head over to penji.co and click on Penji for Good at the bottom of the website to learn how to qualify. If you are listening to this podcast and are not a nonprofit, well, welcome. Become a customer by using the custom coupon code within the podcast show notes. Proceeds of all sales goes directly back to the nonprofit from this interview. Now, back to the show.
Everybody, hello. Welcome to Unified Purpose. You guys know what we do here. We share inspiring tales of compassion. We talk about resilience, community spirit. You know me. I'm your host, Daniela, and I'm Penji's partnership coordinator. And we have great guests today. We have Cassandra Daphne, and we have Carolyn Sasana from the Institute of Civility. I apologize if I butchered any of your guys' names.
No worries.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, guys. Very excited to have you and looking forward for a great conversation.
Our pleasure. Thanks.
So guys, can you tell me, to get the ball rolling, get us started, can you tell us a little bit about what Institute of Civility is about, what you guys do, what you stand for, so that all of the viewers and listeners who maybe are not familiar with it can hear all about it?
I'll kick that off. My colleague and I started the Institute for Civility in Government, actually, back in, we formed it in 1997, launched it in 1998, and we're a 501c3 nonprofit. And so we really started it out of our experience of taking adults to Washington, D.C., and discovering that when we disagree with one another, we really don't know how to handle that very well. And I spent a couple of years looking for someone across the country who was dealing that, couldn't find anyone. And so we stepped into the void and formed the Institute for Civility. Originally focusing on government because that's something that impacts all of us and we can all have a role in. Fast forward 20 years or so. And we dropped the in-government part because we found that was really a stumbling block for people who thought we were political, and we definitely are not political at all. We don't take a position on anybody or any issue. We're just about the process by which we live together in community, even when we disagree on anything from what we're going to have for dinner to which country should do what. I mean, it's applicable for everything from across the kitchen table to international diplomacy. So we work on helping people understand how important civility is to that process and teaching them civility skills so that they can do it, because it does require a lot of patience and intentionality and care and practice. That's what we do.
That's so, something when we were looking to, you know, we were obviously looking for nonprofits to feature on the podcast. When I was looking into you guys, something that really spoke to me was the aspect of international diplomacy and civility. I think they're terms that very few people are familiar with, but that people struggle with. To give you guys background, I studied diplomacy and international relations as my college degree. So I didn't start with marketing and business. It kind of just happened. But we stress that out a lot, because when it came to negotiations, when it came to conversations and just like dealing with a lot of these things, they were huge things that came in. And I had never really seen a nonprofit that focused an idea on such a thing. And it inspired me to want to ask, what actually made you so passionate to, you know, dedicate an entire organization towards this topic specifically?
Well, mostly the shift in culture over time. Like I said, we started back in the 1990s and nobody really understood why we were concerned. But having taken those adults to DC who got along great when they were sightseeing or sharing meals and became good friends, And then when they started discussing issues and found out they were on different sides or had different ideas, they didn't get ugly or start yelling or anything. They just shut down. And when you're tackling issues, whether it is within your family or within the community or the country or, as I said, international diplomacy, if you can't talk with one another, you can't do anything else. We have to be able to talk in a respectful and constructive way. So the trick is to take those disagreements that are a fact of life and switch them from stumbling blocks to assets, to opportunities, to ways to move forward. And I guess part of the passion comes from the fact that my colleague, my co-founder, who is not able to be with us today, but my co-founder, he and I found ourselves on different sides of many, many issues. And we were working together and we had to figure out how to do that in a collegial fashion. So it was in the early 2000s when people came up to us and said, this is a great idea, but my gosh, it's hard. Will you teach us how to do it? And that's when we developed our civility training. So all along the way, we've been way ahead of the curve and we have some great programs. And our new program director, Carolyn Zasada, we are so excited to have her on board. And she's going to bring some fresh energy and fresh ideas and fresh perspectives to the table.
Oh, I didn't realize I was muted. Sorry. Yeah, I think what's really interesting about civility is that it starts from very small things, right? It starts from how the communication happens in your own home and, you know, and then how that goes into, like you said, disagreements in the workplace, in friendships and stuff like that. What I'm curious about is, in with political climate that has been happening for, I think not right now, I just think in the past few years, a lot of stuff has been happening regarding people being very divided, you know, like a lot of talks about free speech. How have you guys approached that change with society in terms of like the topic of civility? Because I think from 1997 to today, it's been like so many changes and so much stuff has been sort of moving around. And with all of the stuff that has been going on politically, I can imagine that having like sort of navigating that is really difficult. And kind of the definition and the approach has to be constantly changing. How have you guys sort of been able to keep up with that?
Well, actually, the definition hasn't changed. And our approach has only expanded and built on what we have already been doing. The political atmosphere doesn't affect us so much in our work because we are not political. What we teach can be applied to politics, and we do have programs. I'll let Carolyn go into that more in a minute. We do have programs that take place within the experience of civic engagement and in the sphere of how citizens can have an effect within the governing process and learn their roles. But that process doesn't have to change. If you're talking about civility, that process does not change regardless of who's in power or all the noise that's going on. You focus on the civility aspects of it and your role, and you put those skills to work regardless of all the noise going on all around you. And so in that sense, the changes that have taken place have not impacted our work. It's only made it more important than ever so that more people can learn those skills and understand how important they are. Our definition of civility is one that my colleague and I came up with when somebody asked us back around the year 2000, what did we mean by civility? And we said, well, We'll get back to you on that. And so we very intentionally created this definition, which is civility is claiming and caring for one's identity, needs, and beliefs without degrading someone else's in the process. So it's not about going along to get along. It's not about gathering in a circle and singing kumbaya and tampering down the differences that divide us. It's about acknowledging those differences and moving forward in the midst of them. And so if you don't mind, I'd like to invite Carolyn to talk about our student legislative seminars, which is just one of our programs that involves civic engagement, but one that really captures the imaginations of people and the participants.
Yes, go ahead, Carolyn.
Thanks, Cassandra and Danielle. So I had the opportunity to attend one of these student legislative seminars recently. And what they are is a 5-day trip to DC. And before that trip, we start by doing an orientation with the students where we walk them through some civility training and help them identify the differences in their perspectives. And then we ask them to together, collectively, come up with 3 topics that they would like to address with their congresspeople and their senators. So then when we get to DC, we get them briefings by subject matter experts on those topics so that they can be a little more educated on them, have a little more of a full perspective. Then we work with the students to come up with something they can collectively agree on. And these are small groups of students. So, right, collective agreement is a challenge in any size group. We really take groups of 15 or less and find that this is a great way to give a really solid quality experience to all of these students. So then they work together with their statements that they want to talk to their representatives about. And we really collect those statements down so that they're prepared to send their message to their reps and their senators. And then we prepare those meetings with them, or, you know, sometimes for the senators, it's going to be legislative aides. But we have the students present to them. And the transformation I saw in the students from their first presentation, third, was just phenomenal.
I keep muting and forgetting. amazing. I think like the reason that I was asking you about that, the politics aspect, and you guys went to talk about this program, which is a great exemplification, is that regardless of how you feel about controversial topics, I think that is where that civility aspect and, you know, how to have those discussions comes into play. It can be really important. I think we see a lot of people struggling to communicate their ideals, their opinions, what they stand for, and then having productive discussions with someone who doesn't feel the same way. Especially with things that are kind of like when it comes to legislations, when it comes to opinions of things like that. And I think sort of being able to teach someone from when they're young how to approach this without it being into like these really big fights is huge. I think it's probably one of the biggest things that we have to target, which is like the younger people, right?
Absolutely. And I'll just say that's part of the challenge of it. And when the students have to work together to come up with decisions or to come up with something, can all, even if it's only 3 to 5 of them, that they can all 3 to 5 agree on, they recognize how challenging it is for our legislators to do the very same thing with bigger groups and stronger feelings. But teaching them to be able to feel like they have a voice, express that they don't agree, is everything.
With social media, oh, sorry, go ahead, Cassandra.
And I just want to say that so much of why this is possible is because in the orientation, when we do civility training, whether it's for the students or some other entity across the country. I mean, we've provided civility training to schools, to legislators, to county commissioners, to neurosurgeons, to different corporations, teachers, all kinds of people, community groups. Part of what we help them understand is that what drives our disagreements is our belief systems. And so we challenge people to understand themselves and where their own belief system comes from. Because so many people, when you mentioned, Daniela, for people to be able to articulate what their position is can sometimes be difficult. They know what they think, but they haven't really thought through why they feel that way. And so we challenged people, our very first rule of civility is to know yourself, understand why you feel or believe the way you do. Is it because of something you read? Is it something your parents taught you, an influential teacher taught you, something you're picking up from your peers, something that a personal experience that influenced your take on that? Because once you begin to understand what's driving your beliefs, you can begin to appreciate that somebody else may think differently or feel differently because something different is driving theirs. And so that gets into the dynamics of disagreement and how we reach those places where we have very different ideas anyway. And you'll if you follow the news, you'll sometimes read an article where somebody will say, I never really cared about this until such and such happened to me, or something like that. So it's important to understand what's driving those conflicts and also to give people permission to disagree. That's also important. And we always encourage people, listen, if you're the only person in a group that feels differently, it's important to claim it. Because otherwise the position lacks integrity and you go home frustrated or angry. And giving people permission to disagree is also an important part of the dynamic, because then it takes some of the tension out. It's okay to say, I think differently, and you don't have to be afraid or angry about it. So that goes into the dynamics that and the training that helps make those conversations possible.
I wanted to ask, because I think huge thing that has influenced how we disagree and communicate with each other is the existence of social media. I think that kind of coming in and sort of revolutionizing the way that communication happens. I think early days of social media were not the discourse was also different. Like, I remember, like, in 2012, where, like, people were fighting on Facebook comments. And people are still fighting on Facebook comments. But I think we see kind of things of more discourse happening, like, via videos and, like, on TikTok and Instagram and whatever social media comes after that. Has that affected the way that you approach this topic or how you work with young people? Because I assume, like, essentially young people are the ones that are more present in this whole thing and who, like, tend to have these type, be faced with these type of situations.
Well, this is why we're so happy to have Carolyn and her colleague, because they're much younger than us and they're much more social media savvy. So I'm going to throw that one at her.
Yeah, I wish our communications director was here. Her name's Talisa McConnell, and she's doing a fantastic job of helping us dive into all the social media realms a lot better and trying to leverage those more. So, but, you know, it's challenging. And of course, I am the director of programs and development. So this is where I say it's hard to do things without. And so, you know, it's always important to make sure that we're pulling in financing and funding so that we can fully fund positions like Talisa's. And right now she's part-time, but if we had her full-time, she'd be going crazy on all the social media. But, you know, I'm excited to look at leveraging interns and people like that to maybe help us with. But I totally agree. We need to update some of those things. Yes, I'm excited to see what comes of that.
No, I was asking because I feel like social media has revolutionized almost everything. And, you know, with things like, I think communication is huge, just like how people communicate with each other. I think also I wanted to ask you guys about what you have sort of experienced when working with people is what are some misconceptions that people have regarding civility, regarding, you know, having that kind of respect. I think a lot of people tend to think that they are being civil, that they're having civil conversations, or that because their opinion is the right one, quote unquote, or because they believe that what they think is correct, that they are in having a moral high ground. I've noticed that's like my personal take. Feel free to correct me. What are some misconceptions that you guys feel like people have regarding this whole topic?
Can I jump in on this first, Cassandra?
Sure.
And I think it's more because I have the newer perspective. Oh, I meant to say, I've only been with the Institute for about 2 months now. So I'm thrilled to be able to have an impact on the Institute. So passionate mission. But one of the biggest things that I wasn't anticipating, one of the first misconceptions I had was thinking that it was just politeness. And politeness didn't really have a place in progress and civil discourse. And, you know, the way that Cassandra and the Institute teaches civility is not like that, though. They make it very clear right off the bat that it's not just politeness. It's not withholding what you believe or what you think. It's just, as she said in the definition, claiming your own beliefs and then respecting others, but not letting go of your own, you know, feelings. It's being open-minded and respectful of the other while you learn more.
And I will just say one of the misconceptions that's out there when you start talking about civility is the idea that everybody wants to be civil. Because from the very beginning, back in the 90s, we had people tell us very clearly that they want nothing to do with civility, that they're not interested, that we could take it and you can imagine what they told us to do with it. We've been cursed at. We've been spat at. The prayer is that we're never shot at. And so there's always going to be that element in society. I believe there always has been. People are people. And I believe that on one far end of the spectrum, and I'm not talking about politics here, I'm just talking about a range of behaviors, there are always going to be people who don't want anything to do with the rest of us and are very clear about that. But for the vast majority of people, I think, and again, this is across the political or ideological or racial or generational or class or any of those other silos you want to put us in, I think the vast majority of people are starving for civility and are hungry for it, and they just don't know how to get there. And it can be very hard when somebody's in your face in a less than kind way, or when you feel truly threatened physically or emotionally. It can be very, very difficult. And it does require commitment.
Commitment
of high energy, focus, passion, practice. And sometimes you're still going to get it wrong. I mean, we all have a bad day. And that's why the Institute sends out quotes quite regularly to the people who subscribe to us or who support us through membership, is because we all need reminders, myself included. And we all need role models. And the great thing about being a part of something like the Institute for Civility and Government is that so many people feel isolated and alone, particularly since COVID, that being a part of something like this helps you understand that you're not alone, that you're a part of something bigger, that you have a support group to help you be more civil. And I think that's really important in our ability to maintain civility and to have constructive conversations is to tap into that desire that deep down I think most of the people have.
Yeah, I think like it's commendable because like you said, I hate it when I feel attacked. You know, like just a general, not a general setting. I don't like it when someone talks to me and it feels kind of rude from the get. Like that immediately ruins the conversation for me because it's like, well, then why are you saying it to me like this? Like, even if it's constructive criticism or creative, like, or just like a creative discourse, even if it's not something like a very loaded take, the approach is already going to set the tone for the entire discussion from that point forward.
So part of what our civility training does is teach people how to reset that tone. When it gets started that way, how do you keep from just going down that road of attack or defend or fight or flight? How do you get out of that? And so that's part of what our training does. And it can be done. And the truth is people respond well to civility when you can pull it off. It's sort of contagious. What goes around comes around. So if you can defer that rudeness and that attack that's coming at you for whatever reason, you can make great progress.
Does it ever come across? I feel like I've had discussions with people who kind of they try to de-escalate situations and then it feels like it's passive aggressive or condescending. And then it's the opposite effect of kind of de-escalating. And then it's just like, well, why are you being like this? Do you know what I feel like that tends to happen a lot with trying to de-escalate situations, which is that it feels like an attack still, except it feels passive aggressive. I would imagine you've had people who feel that way too.
Well, I will say that, any effort that someone makes can go amiss. Any effort that someone makes can be misinterpreted. We talk a lot about the difference between intent and impact and understanding that and getting curious about it. That's really important to being willing to be curious, being willing to learn. Carolyn said being open-minded. That's a huge part of civility. And it doesn't mean that I have to adopt your position or agree with you. You know, a lot of people think open-minded means, oh, I have to, you know, let you persuade me. Well, you may still hold on to your strongly felt conviction, but being open-minded is being open to learning at least why the other person feels the way they do, at the very bottom line. And we feel like civility is the baseline of respect that we owe one another. It's the start as fellow human beings. And so it's not always going to be a perfect conversation. Civility doesn't mean it's always going to be rosy, but it means you're giving it your best effort and it's going to be better than it would be otherwise. For sure.
Yeah, I totally get that. I wanted to ask these questions. I feel like they're probably roadblocks that you guys face with. I just think human interaction is such a tricky thing. And it's so loaded to a person's life, into their background, their trauma, their the beliefs, how they grew up, the culture, so many things that come into play as to why a person feels the way they feel and why they react in the ways that they react. So, you know, I was curious about how all of these things play into conflict solving and bringing civility into the conversation, which
they do play. And you listed a whole lot of things from childhood to trauma to, you know, all kinds of things. And the thing is that the more we get curious about one another, the more we can find ways to connect that perhaps we didn't expect. One of the things that we do teach is that we're multidimensional. We're not just one thing. So I'm not just that person who's yelling today because things have gone really bad or whatever. There's layers and layers and layers to each of us. And I even, my colleague and I have learned over the years that there's layers and layers and layers of truth. And that doesn't make one layer of truth any less true than another layer of truth, but you have to keep peeling those back. And that's sort of like taking the time to find out, again, what's driving those belief systems and what's factoring into decisions, conversations, anger, joy, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think like having organizations like yours who can sort of bring that conversation in, I think it's a topic that can be very overlooked. We tend to focus sometimes a lot on like what opinions we have, but we don't think about productive ways of discussing them. So I think having stuff like this is very important and very nuanced, I think. And I think it's great that you guys have been doing this for such a long time, and a great note to end the podcast on. But before we do, I do want to give you guys space to promote anything, to plug anything. If anything that we spoke about today resonated with our audience, if they want to donate work, whatever it is, the space is yours, guys.
I'm throwing that to Carolyn.
Okay. Our website is institutetforcivility.org. Cassandra, help me if I get anything wrong. And you can become a member there and subscribe to our monthly emails and quarterly newsletters. Find out more there. We do congressional student forums. That is one of the other primary programs that we have. So if you'd like to have a congressional student forum, we'd love to help you do that. And we'd love to have more student legislative seminars as well. And we do civility training all over the country. So just reach out if you're interested.
Hey, awesome, guys. And I will be adding the links to the description of the video so that anybody can easily access them, so that all of this can be ready to go. Cassandra and Carolyn, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Daniela.
It was great having you guys. I will see you on the next episode.
Bye.
You've been listening to Unified Purpose, brought to you by Penji. Check out the show notes to learn more about today's guest. And to learn more about Penji, the human first creative subscription service, head over to penji.co. And by the way, if you're still listening, it would mean the absolute world to us if you were to share this podcast with a friend, and of course, subscribe.